Medrash, Medrash Rabba, that this heretic comes to Rav Gamliel, and he says to him, you know, your God, he's a great artist, brilliant. He found these raw materials, these colors, Choshech, Tohoim, Tohu Vavohu, the darkness, the abyss, the chaos and the void, and the water. And he made this brilliant creation. And Rav Gamliel says, no. He says, every one of the things that you mentioned, the Torah, maybe in a different place, but somewhere the Torah talks about created. Yoytze Oyer, Boyre Choshech, right? So, even darkness is a creation, the abyss is a creation, everything's a creation. So, in Ishbitz, of course, they wonder about a medrash like this. Oh, what's going on? What's really going on? What's underneath? So, the Tiferes Yosef says, in the name of his father, who's speaking the name of his Zayde, that the question, and we've talked about it when we were discussing the meaning of the reason for Sefer Yetzirah and the meaning of what does it mean, what are Kabbalistic studies, right? That we want to know, how does the Word of God, which is infinite, become this finite substance? This smelly stuff, right? This, the ashpo, right? The midden, the dung heap. How'd you get from there to there? The Word of God is sizzles, right? What other word could you say, right? It zips and sizzles. It's like the speed of light times the speed of light. It's all the most sublime. So how do we get from the sublime to this slime, to the sub? How do we get from that highest to this lowest? Doesn't make sense. If Chaim, if life is the divine that flows through everything, the Ruach Elikim Chaim, then how do you get, where's Moves? Where's the darkness? Where's the death? Where's the decay? How does it happen? How is it connected? Then everything should be divine. Everything should be eternal. Everything should be infinite. So that heretic, he had a solution. There's God, and then there's the ingredients of the universe that God found, like a painter. He finds his ochres and his umbers and his, you know, canvases and brushes and stuff, and he paints. But we are Eden, and we don't believe in Kadmus HaOlam. We don't believe in anything that existed prior to God saying, V'yimnekim yihi oir. So for us, we're stuck with that problem of how did it get here from there. So one of the ways the Ishbitzer always gets around the problem is by saying it's a problem only of perspective. That the truth is, everything is divine. The truth is, everything sizzles and zips and crackles with that infinite light times the speed of light, and everything is eternal and infinite. Our perception of things, the way we see things, the way we experience things, is in this very physical way. And, you know, things smell. You can end up with a dung heap. And most of the world smells. And that idea of smell and decay being the metaphor for that which is no longer infinite, no longer sizzles and crackles with life. So, why, how does it happen? So when we were learning Sefer Yetzirah, we discussed how in their first perek, there's ruach, ruach me ruach, mayim me ruach, esh mi mayim, and so on. How, so to speak, God, we use the metaphor of God breathing outwards, and so that makes something which is, so to speak, outside of God, that God breathes into from himself, which then breathes back, and then there's God and not God. God says, Anoichi, I. Yeah. That was the Hishtalshelus. That what we refer to as the chain. Ultimately, though, our belief is that it's an illusion. And that what we're seeing is, in Yiddish we say, Du hast fleischige Augen. Your eyes are fleischig, your eyes are meat, your eyes are made of flesh. So, memeila, the consequence is that you see things a certain way. If you had other kind of eyes, if you had spiritual eyes, if you had eyes that were connected, even if you had fleischige Augen, but they were still connected to the ruchnius that is inside you, then you would see through the illusion. So in a sense, any attempt to learn mysticism or to practice a mystical awareness or a lifestyle is an attempt to go beyond the boundaries that are imposed by these fleischige Augen. And to see. In fact, it says at the end of the creation of the 6 days, Vayar elikim es kol asher osa, God had looked at everything that he'd made, v'hinei toiv moed, it was very good. Vayihi erev, vayihi voker yom hashishi, and it was evening, it was morning, the 6th day, vayichulu hashemayim, and then we go into Shabbos. So the Medrash on that pasuk says, "Kvoid elikim haster dova, uchvoid melochim chakoyer dova." That it is the glory of God to hide things, and it is the glory of the king to unravel and reveal, to research, to delve into things, to expose things. So the Medrash there on that pasuk says, from the beginning of Bereshis ad kan, until this pasuk of God sees everything and it's marvelous, it's kvod elokim haster dova, it's the glory of God to hide things. From here onwards, vayichulu hashamayim v'haoretz, and the beginning of Shabbos, from here onwards, kvod melochim chakor dova, it's the glory of kings to reveal things. So there's a split. There's the idea of the Creator as God. The Creator of God as God is his glory is to hide things. And then there's God as King, the Creator as King. And it's the glory of kings to be revealed and to reveal things. So, the split between everything is divine, and entry or the fall into that world that we mostly inhabit, where things smell. How do we get from there to there? So, if you think back to a moment in your childhood, and here sometimes I think about the way I've spoken to my children. If you think of a moment where your child did something and you spoke in a certain way, in a certain tone, oh, maybe you were asking your kid, did you really do that? I mean, what you really wanted to say is, I know you did that, but how dare you do such a thing? Couldn't you see that it was a bad thing to do? It's a defining moment in the life of a child when we do such a thing, when we speak like that. And if you can imagine, if you can throw your mind back to a moment where you spoke in a certain way to your child, and you asked a question in a certain tone of voice, an interrogatory question, and you could see the reaction the child is having, that it's a defining moment. For us human beings, when God says to Adam, Hamin ha'etz, Asher amarti lecho bilti achoy mimenu achaltu, have you eaten from that tree that I told you not to eat of it? Let's imagine what it felt like to be Adam Arishan at that moment, right? Because, I mean, you're a child, right? Your parent is saying, did you do that thing that I told you not to do? Now, your parent... Right. It's true. The Torah tells us that they realize that they're naked and they hide. Right. So again, your question is good. The shame that Adam feels, that Adam and Chava feel about eating from the tree of knowledge precedes God's question. So then, why is God questioning? If they're already ashamed and they have that knowledge, right? And they know, they're aware that they've done something wrong. And here, again, I invite you to think about what it felt like as a child when you knew you'd done something wrong, right? And you were afraid of being caught. But the moment that the parent said, did you do that? That is a defining moment. Because at that moment, your parent knows something you don't, which is, you're a child and you do those kind of things because we're children and we do things we're not supposed to. And yeah, we've already become aware that we've done something we shouldn't. We stole something, we ate something we shouldn't, we said something, we did something we knew we're not supposed to do. But when the parent shouts and says, did you do that? A chasm opens up under our feet. And in Ishbitz parlance, that shout has a name, a particular name. It's called the Ga'ara, the shout. And if this class were to have a name, I would call it the divine shout. Because that is an
existential question that still echoes in our mind, and it's so loud that it is disorienting. And we are never again, as human beings, able to get rid of that question. Did I do that? In other words, am I okay? Am I a not okay person? And that part of our being human is our trying to drown out that voice. But the reason for the voice is because God wants us to lose something that we had before. Awareness that Adam and Chava had before they'd sinned, they can no longer get that back because they've been shouted at. That Ge'ora, Hamin Ho'etz. And that's why we've been learning a few times that the Gemara says, Minayin Remez Lahoman Min HaTorah. Where is there a hint to Haman? And the Gemara brings that posuk, Hamin Ho'etz. Don't read it Hamin, read it Haman. You see, we've talked about this before. What was Haman's Groisa Chachma to make us believe that we didn't deserve anymore to be Jewish, to be protected, to live, to survive, to be given the benefit of the doubt or the chance to start again? The whole thing about Haman was he convinced us that we were Ovdei Avodah Zorah, that we had bowed down to a tzelem, we had worshipped an idol when we bowed to that effigy of Achashverosh or whatever it was, and that we were mechuyev kliya, that we were worthy only of annihilation. That was what Haman does, and he learned from his Zayda Amalek. Amalek is always there, right when a person needs a little bit of self-confidence, needs a little bit of faith in himself, needs a little bit of the voice that says, no, shin, give out, forget about it, just move on. Haman is the voice, Amalek is the voice that says, no, you can't move on. You're ruined, everything's ruined, it's finished. That comes from that shout of God saying to Adam, Hamin ha'etz, asher amati lebilte achoy memen achalte, from that tree that I told you not to eat from it, you ate, did you? It's an unbelievable moment. The Ishbitzer takes this moment and he says, we all of us, we all feel it. We spend half our lives feeling it. Did you really? Emes, you did this thing? I mean, the question is, of course, that God knows what Adam and Chava have done, you know? And he knows the shame that they're feeling, right? So, by shouting, God has split us to that place where, if you want to know how come we have fleischige Augen, that's the reason. Because something gets jarred inside us, some perception of our own world, of our own divinity. Right? We no longer see ourselves as these sizzling, crackling, you know, electric, divine, infinite beings. Now there's this question, did I really? What's the purpose? So the Tiferes Yosef in this week's Sedra, he talks about, the Zohar Kodesh says that Noach belongs to the world of Tikkun, the world of fixing. But all the previous generations, they really belong to a world of destruction. Oilem d'acharivu. And the Zohar Kodesh bases it on the fact that the Torah tells us, Vayoled Noach shloisha bonim. Noach has three sons, Es Shem, Es Chom, Ve'es Yofes. The word S always comes to include something. See, the Torah could have just said, Noach has three sons, Shem, Chom, and Yofes. Right? Shem, Chom, Ve'yofes. It says, Es Shem, Ve'es Chom, Ve'es Yofes. The Tiferes Yosef notes that when Chava gives birth to Cain and Hevel, it says, Vateled es Cain, she gave birth to Cain, Vatoisef lo ledes, and she gave birth again, Es Ochev, to his brother, Es Hevel, to Hevel. The way the Torah describes the birth of Cain and Hevel is very different from the way the Torah is describing Shem, Chom, and Yofes. Here it's and Shem, and Chom, and Yofes. And there it's, oh, she gave birth again. And it was his brother. And he was Hevel. So there's not the same connection. So the Torah is emphasizing the fact that birth prior to Shem, Chom, and Yofes is a disparate, it's an event on its own. It's not really, there isn't the connection between people, between events that we are going to find in the story of Noach. Because the more that happens in Parshas Bereishis, the more things are falling apart. Every event is really a new world that is going to be created and destroyed. The whole story of creation is a story of destruction. Alma d'achrivu. In fact, the creation of the world doesn't really begin until the story of Noach. That's the story. That in each of us, there are two narratives. There's the narrative of how we come to be, and how we come to be involves a lot of destruction. We're born, we grow, we ruin things, we break things, we fall apart, we pick ourselves up, and we move on. And then there comes a point in our life, right, where we become Noach and the three sons, and that's a whole new Geschichte. That belongs in the Olam HaTikun. So, the Tiferes Yosef in Parshas Noach, he brings a medrash, very strange medrash, that we learn a lot without really, you know, the medrash says, Ze Sefer told us Adam, Ze told us Shemaim v'oretz behi bar'am. The Medrash says, Melamed, this teaches us that the Kodesh Baruch Hu is Boine Alomos u'machrivan. That God creates worlds and destroys them. So the story of the creation of the world isn't linear, the way we just read the text on the top of it, but there's creation and destruction, and fresh creation, fresh destruction, just keeps on going on. And then the Medrash adds, Vo'oma, so God creates and destroys, and he says, Yason lo hanyon li, these, it doesn't please me, Dein hanyon li. Oh, this one, these please me. So God makes worlds, destroys them, he doesn't like them. creates a fresh set. This also. Nish dosaber. I didn't mean it. No. Carries on. Makes also. Oh, yeah. This is what. This. I like this one. So the world that we have here is one that God finally likes. So the Tiferes Yosef says, how could that be? How could you? Where does the Medrash get off making such a suggestion about God that God requires somehow to create and destroy, to have like this destruction testing of you know, models before he finally finds one that's gonna last and that pleases him? You know, like, wait, God has to test destruct his designs? Like, he can't design it right in the beginning to be the one that he wants? So he says, this is a metaphor for who we are and how our lives go. That we in our own life have this cycle of birth and death, of destruction and creativity, that we make worlds and then we realize that this is not how we want to live, and we destroy and we start again, right? We get into relationships and we think to ourselves, gewalt, and then we realize, nah, this is nicht, this is not it. We get into businesses, we get into careers, we get into situations. We think to ourselves, yeah, this is going to be good, and then we get into it and it's not good, right? What's the purpose? How come a person can't be born with like an animal, right? An animal doesn't have to go through this. The instincts of the animal are pretty much, you know, from the moment it's born, you know, that mouse, that dog, whatever, that bird, its life is really mapped out what's going to happen to it. So why is it for us different? And then it's modeled in that divine need to create and destroy. So Tiferes Yosef says, because we need to be shouting. We need to be saying, why? What is going on? Why is this going on? God wants us to have constantly in our being, deep inside us, this voice that says, why? Faravos. What does it have? Why does life have to be like this? The Tiferes Yosef says, so what does God get out of it that we are, you know, in a state of complaint, you know? In any normal person, when he opens up his eyes and you open a newspaper, you turn on the radio, you look at the computer, I mean, you can't go through the day without a million times saying to yourself, why? What is going on with the world? Why should it be like this? How can God stand it that it should be like this? That's what God wants from us. The lion said, you know, why do those buffalo have to die? It doesn't say such a thing, right? We do. We're asking ourselves all the time, you know, why am I wearing a pair of shoes that are made in a sweatshop somewhere in Hungary? Like, why do I have to be part of this world that is so tortured and in so much, you know, self-destruct mode? Like, why is it go? What does God get out of this? So, throughout the Torah that we've been learning, and all the years that we've been learning, one of the threads that comes through is that we are all granted a vision that is then taken away. We all see things that we say, psst, that's what I want to be. That's the world that I want to live in. That's the relationship that I want to have. And then the next minute, I'm fighting with her, right? And the next minute, I'm eating something I shouldn't be eating. And the next minute, I've purchased something that I didn't want to buy, and so on and so forth, right? We get glimpses. And sometimes, you know, we're so far away that God has to actually pick us up by the scruff of the neck and show us a spiritual life. And then we get a taste for it. Wow, what it's like to go to Daven every day. And then reasons, one thing happens and another, I can't get to shul, this and that. And it's like, I get out of the habit. Then one day I'm saying to myself, ah, when I used to go to shul, it used to be so gewalt. And this is a metaphor for, you know, everybody has in their own life what they have, right? That we get moments where we feel we know what life wants from us, what we need to be doing, what the spiritual path is. And then it's taken away. Something happened, I lost it, I got out of the habit, and I'm now in this drudgery, I'm in this rut. And I say, Rabbi Shalom, why? How come I'm so far away? How come I don't feel you in my life like I used to? I used to get up in the morning, wash negovasser, run to shul, and it's like I could feel what it was to be a yid, and now here I'm stuck. Can't you do something for me? The Ishbitzer says, that feeling, that tana, that complaint, that longing, the teshuka, the desire, that we realize that we're not who we really want to be, that we realize we want to be more, we want to know more. Why am I such a amoris? Why am I so ignorant? How come I didn't learn when I had the chance to learn all these things? And I remember what it was like to sit in the Beis HaMidrash and really learn, and how come I'm so far away from that now? All those complaints that we have, that all, if we look inside us, it's connected to the desire. If it was just a desire, we wouldn't be able to express it. What God has done by shouting at us is He's taught us how to shout. So it's not just that I have this sense, a very like a ghostly sense of things are not right, or there used to be a time when I was more spiritual. I can physically exclaim, Rabbeinu Shalom, why aren't you helping me? Why aren't I a better person? Why is it that I used to be able to get up and go to shul and now I can't? Why is it that I'm so wishy-washy? How come that my feelings of emunah and faith and bitochen and trust that I used to have in you, how come that they got so weak and faint and gray, and they're not full of colors like they used to? Like, oh, this ability to shout. What is this? This is tefillah. This is what davening is, right? I'm expressing those feelings of my frustration at the distance that I am from God. This comes from the first original shout, when God shouted at me and He said, Hamin ho'etz, did you? You ate from the tree that I said you shouldn't eat from? You ate from it? That shout, which shook my world and made me no longer able to access the divine, perfect Hershey that I was, and has set me trembling and has set me, given me a lack of confidence and so on and so forth, all the negative things that spring from that divine shouting at me, of also giving me the koyach to shout back at God and to say, Rabbeinu Shalom, how could you forsake me? How could you leave me stuck inside this flesh and blood and not give me access to the spirit that's inside me? How can you go on like this and not give me a chance to learn and to find you and to see you? It's working both ways, says the Ishbitzer. Because the Tiferes Yosef quotes the Zohar in Parshas B'Shalach, Parshas Shlach Lecho, that in the future, when there'll be Tchias HaMesim, When the dead get up again, what's the energy? You know, we have a rule in spirituality that bracha has to be chal on something. For a blessing to become physical, there has to be something for it to attach itself to, right? The Lubavitcher Rebbe, when he was in the last years, he would give dollars to Hasidim, to anybody who would come, right? What's the pshat? If I give you a bracha, I'm going to give you something that the bracha should be able to attach itself to. Also, he would give a piece of cake, a piece of lekach, right? So you could make a bracha barim in mezonis. And the idea was that there's something for the bracha the Rebbe is giving you to attach itself to. Because if there's nothing there, and I just give you a bracha, there's nothing to become something. There has to be. This is a law in spirituality. There has to be something for the bracha to attach itself to. So the Zohar Kodesh says, so we after we're dead, and the Rebbeinu Shlomo is going to make Tchiyas HaMeisim, what's the bracha going to attach itself to? So the Zohar Kodesh says, Havle de Garmi, the emptiness inside the bones, the hollow inside the bones. And he goes on to explain that that's the suffering and the perseverance, which the Ishbitzer interprets as being that complaint, that shout, the ultimate suffering that we experience, which is, you know, the Tana, that we're always arguing with God, Rebbeinu Shlomo, can't you do better for me? Can't you be mekarev me? Can't you bring me close? You gave me a taste of what it felt like to be a yid, and now I have to spend all this time out here in the wilderness without this connection that I used to feel to you when I was younger. That complaint, that's the havle de garmi, that's the hollow inside the bones, that's the quest, that's the longing, that's the tshuka and the tefillah, which is all part of that one aspect of, that's the response that we as human beings have developed to that big question that's being asked inside us of Hamin Ha'etz, that shout that God shouted at us, which we feel inside our bones. So our response is to turn that into a tefillah, into a prayer. God, how could you? So when we read in the Torah, Vayis'atzev el liboy, that God was depressed. We learn at the end of Bereishis that God sees everything that's going on, and he gets depressed, and he has these regrets. Vayinochem, God has these regrets that he made man. You know, how could you say that God has a regret? In fact, there's a pasuk that says, God is not a man to have regrets. So why does the Torah actually use such a description? So the Tiferes Yosef says, it's part of that same story that God is telling us, Chevre, this is how you make your way as a spiritual being, with that sense of a regret, with that sense of, oi, this is so depressing. I want to get back to where I was. I used to be happy. I used to have simcha in my avodah. I used to have simcha in learning Torah. I used to have simcha in giving tzedakah and being with other people and just being a yid. And now here. And that's, again, a reflection of that divine depression where God says, oi, look what I've done. And that regret. Ah, maybe I should have done it different. Maybe I can do it different. And the Torah actually uses those phrases at the end of the story of Bereishis to give us a clue. So the the Tiferes Yosef ends by saying, and this is the difference between Adam and Noach, that Adam, really, he represents that part of us which makes all the mistakes, that part of us which is boina oilamis umachrivan, we build up worlds, we imagine how we're going to live, and then something happens, we do things wrong, we make mistakes. And so even when we have children and we do start things, it's like vayosef oid, so we have one thing and then we start something else and we do that, and this year also hevel, and then we come to that part of our life where it's vayoled noyach, as shem, as cham, as yofes, and that's the oilam of tikkun, and that's the world of fixing. And what connects the world of destruction, our world of destruction, with our world of fixing? To be able to see, when we get to the world of fixing, when you get to that madrega of noyach, when you get to that place in your life where you realize there's a purpose even to the destruction. For you to be here, to get to this place, you had to be at that place first, right? Okay, so at a certain point in our life, we realize, to be the man I am, to be the woman I am, I had to be the person that I was. Fair enough, okay. Now, the Ishbitzer says, you got to take the next step. You have to realize that between there and here, there's this shout. There's this disorienting shout, which was both, it was the noise of you hiding your own divinity from yourself. It was the sound of you doing things wrong and shouting at yourself and getting cut off from the real divine, right? But it's also the cure. Because this shout, this is you in prayer. This is your soul begging for a better world, a better person. And in fact, if you really look closely, you'll see that noise, that tefillah, that tshuka, that longing, is the sound of God. You think you're complaining at God. You think you're asking questions of God. You think you're saying, God, Rabban Shlomo, why are you making me like this? Why can't you make me better? Can't you draw me? All those questions that we have, they are in fact the original sound of God shouting at us, Hamin ho'etz, asher mati lebilti yachol mimena. That's the same sound. When we realize, when you look inside yourself and you realize that those voices, right, the accusing, the voice of the conscience, the whatever, however you understand, that is not just, it's not just the blaming voice, right? But that's also the voice of your better self. It's also the voice of your praying self. At that moment, you can split the split, and you can look past the split to that place where you as a person, you as a soul, are still zipping and crackling in the fullness of that divine essence of who you are, in that place where the world doesn't smell, where there isn't, you know, that big distance between the divine and the mundane, between the world of the spirit and the world of the decay, then in actual fact you can see that there never was. And it becomes Kvoid Elokim Hasteidova, Kvoid Melech Chakoidova, the glory of God is to hide things and the glory of the king is to unravel and reveal things, that it's both, that you are both.